Sober on Purpose is the podcast that takes you beyond clean to fulfilling your dreams. Other programs get you sober. We ask, what's next? Come thrive with us.
Hello, Sober on Purpose family. I have been chatting with probably one of the most fascinating people I've come across in a long time. I really feel like her story is going to resonate with you and many of the things that you are going through around shame, dealing with family members who have just exploded in chaos around addiction. And she is not only a coach, a podcaster, she's a storyteller. That is just fascinating to me. So Marcia Van Winesburg is joining us today. She's a six-time best-selling author. When She Stopped Asking Why. Is that the latest one?
That is my solo one. I have a couple other ones since then.
Okay. So that is one that you need to grab a hold of. And then another one that we were just talking about is Every Body, as in your physical body, holds a story. So she uses outspoken NLP certification programs and coaching and podcasting and the power, get this, this is great, the power of radical responsibility and owning your own choices in your life. So that's how she empowers people to take hold of their own stories and heal. Marcia, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am thrilled to have this conversation. I believe we could probably talk for a very long time. So yes, I'm thrilled to be here.
Thanks. It has been fascinating already. I've been working with my audience around shame, and you and I were just talking about that. Can you fill us in on a little bit of your story and how shame really impacted you during that time?
Absolutely. So I was a parent who started to deal with teen substance abuse about 10, 12 years ago. My kids were 12-ish, 13. And I'm speaking in the non-experimental phase. I'm speaking about, you know, it affecting going to school, it affecting not coming home, like definitely much bigger scale than what most people will refer to it in. And it just continued. And no matter what happened, we were trying to find solutions, you know, trying to hold the job, trying to, you know, do all of the things, look for answers, look for support, and continuously feeling in this space that there must be something wrong with me because I am in a space that this is what's happening in my family. And somewhere along the way, most women, we believe that we have written this invisible contract that every single thing that happens in the house is our responsibility to fix, manage, control, and micromanage. And I don't know where we thought we signed that, but most of us believe that we did. And I lived in that space of feeling it was my job to fix this. And so I gave it everything that I had for a very long time. And through a lot of counseling, a lot of support, a lot of doing work, trying to find a way to survive, right? There was no goal of thriving at that time. It was, how do I make it one more day? How do I survive today? How do I handle when life blows up tonight at 2 a.m? Like, what do I do? And how do I navigate that? And through that work, the word shame came up through the first time I probably really heard it was two things. I read Glennon Doyle's book called Love Warrior, which is not a romance book, just for anybody who's, it was my first experience of hearing somebody sharing a vulnerable story. That was one of the very first vulnerable stories that I read. I read that. I read Stay Close. And I can't think of her name right now off the top of my head. Incredible book about boundaries and respecting, you know, boundaries with your loved ones. And then I heard Brené Brown's TED Talk on vulnerability, and she talked about shame. And I sat there and went, wait a minute, like that's me. Like I could literally feel it and recognize that was me. And really what it comes down to is that, you know, guilt is I did something bad. Shame is I am bad. Mm-hmm. And when we're telling ourselves that we are bad, what we're doing is we're like stuffing ourselves into this box where the story is our entire identity. And that's where I talk a little bit about story and narrative, which we can go into if that's, but this piece that I am the story, I am bad, I did something wrong. And I lived there for a really long time until I started to understand that the reason shame lives and grows and takes on such a life is because we give it life. We give it life because we won't talk mm-hmm. about it. We won't share. We won't give it a voice. The second you start giving a voice, all of a sudden it loses its power. And I actually found that out by accident because I was being asked to speak at our school and help out some of the parents that were in there. And I had a really good relationship with the school. I wasn't trying to hide anything there. And they said, would you come in and speak to some of the parents? Because we don't know what to say or do. And as soon as I did, there was this moment of like, oh, that actually felt better to do that. And the more I started to share the story, complete accident, the more I started to share the story, a couple of things happened. I found so many more people who were walking in my shoes. I found that people connected to our story too. I found out that I wasn't alone. I was seeing this huge amount of shame that people were carrying. And I was like, this is crazy. We've got people who are hiding in stories for their whole life. So afraid everyone's going to find out, yet we're all walking through something. And so I started to get really passionate about shame and understanding. And I recently gone down a pretty deep hole of understanding the physiological hold it has on our body and how it literally grips us and stops us from allowing ourselves to be seen. So that's been the journey of shame. But if you want to release shame, you give it a voice. And the second you start to give it a voice, it can't survive.
I'm glad you brought it back to that, because that's what I was going to ask you about. Is you walked into a school in a community you're known in. I don't know how long you've been in that community, but the community you're known in, friends, family, if people didn't know, they were going to know now, because we live in a small town and it would just spread. I imagine you live in a town where it would spread too. Give it a voice. Mm-hmm. What in you said, I have the courage to do this?
I wish, you know what, to be completely honest, there are times where I have to go back and harness that little part of me then, because when I feel fear now, I'm like, wait, what was Marcia in like 2015 doing, 2014? How did she have the courage to do that? I think it came down to, honestly, there was two things, probably more than two, but two, in the sense that I was so sick and tired of where I was at. And if I had to stay in that space, it felt suffocating. I felt like I wasn't going to survive. And I felt like if I continue on the path that I'm on, I'm not sure I'm going to be here. Like, minus my kids being here, I'm not sure I'm going to make it. So what else can I do? Because my way is not working. Like, it's obviously not working. That was one. And then the second thing with that is this curiosity and this moment of, I was with a counselor, two things. And she said, you need to be a springboard for your kids if they ever decide to come back to you. And right now you're nothing but a pile of sand. You couldn't take care of anyone else if you had to. That might sound harsh, but she was so right. I needed to hear that. Like, I actually needed to hear it. And she was right. And I said to her, but everywhere I turn, no one is talking about this. Mm-hmm. And she said, maybe that's because you're supposed to. And I remember that being a light bulb moment of like, that's crazy. And what if that's true, actually? Like, what if I could actually do something good with the worst experience of my life? How would that feel? And I'm like, I don't know, because right now I know how this feels. And maybe that's what my next step is. Did I ever have any vision of it being what it is now with books and podcasts? Not at all. I didn't. And I think it's important that I didn't see that, because I believe I would have self-sabotaged it years ago because I would have been way too scared. So we're not meant to see the whole picture at once. I was literally just trying to figure out how to move forward.
I love it. I love it. Bringing in that self-sabotage piece and the pile of sand. So you could continue being the pile of sand who can't even take care of themselves, or you were given a divine calling, basically.
I was.
And you accepted.
Yeah.
That's the key piece. You accepted. When you talk about the relief of talking to this small, I'm assuming it was a relatively small group of parents in the school, at least the first time.
Yes, very small.
As you look back on that, what was the body sensation? What was the mental release? What were the things that you went through for 2015, Marcia, to release that?
Well, what a great question. And earlier we were talking about like somatically releasing energy. And I remember being in this space. It was my husband and I who we both went in to talk. And we had done a lot of groups and couples counseling and parent counseling and dealing with it. And at one point, the counselor said, "What are you two doing that's working?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I don't think anything is working. Like, I'm in this space of," and he said, "No, seriously, this room is packed and you're the only parents that are together and you are dealing with both of your boys, not one. So what are you doing? You need to figure out what it is that you're doing because this could help other people." And so when we went to the school, I said to my husband, "Do you want to come with me?" And he's like, "I'm not going to go into school." And I'm like, "I think it would be very helpful to have, you know, a man coming in and speak too." And we both did. In my body personally, I had a moment of thinking, this is actually like, this is a sign. This is what we're supposed to. I felt relief. I felt like I could help somebody else out. I didn't have all the answers, but here's the thing. We don't have to have all the answers. I was able to help them be seen and heard. Mm. Isn't that really such a big piece of it? Like so many times I wanted help and I wanted support, but geez, is it really powerful to be seen and heard and know that you're not crazy. Like, this is not okay. And you're not crazy and you're not a terrible person and you're not doing it all wrong. And so I felt such a sense of relief. And I do remember that very first meeting thinking, I have a feeling this is going to be something. I have a feeling that this is going to be, I don't know what yet, but I have a feeling. And everything just kind of slowly builds on that. Now, again, that doesn't mean that it was this beautiful, smooth sailing where we just went, no. Because when I started to a space of thinking, I want to speak on a stage and I actually want to, you know, write my solo book. And I was excited and feeling like I could do this. This could be good and I could make a difference. I still had to navigate majority family and friends thinking I had lost my mind. So it's in this space. You have to build the best relationship with yourself because that's what you're always coming home to. And I knew deep down, I couldn't get people to see what I could see yet, but I had a feeling, like a really strong intuitive feeling, that I could do something good with this story.
You have just walked into where you run a podcast called Own Your Own Choices. Did I get the name right?
Own Your Choices, Own Your Life.
Own Your Choices, Own Your Life. But it is about owning your own choices. Mm-hmm. So one of the episodes, and I was going to have the number all ready to go. We'll put it in the show notes. One of the episodes talks about when you stay in that internal and talking to yourself instead of talking out and sharing this and building others. Tell us a little bit more about what happens to you when you stay in that isolation.
So this is such a good, and I'm going to condense this as best as I can. I am an NLP trainer. So that's neuro-linguistic programming trainer. That means I've spent a lot of years understanding how our brain works. We are in a space that we have like 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. 80%+ of them are repeated from the day before, and 80 to 90% of them are negative, which means we are on this constant negative loop of train of thought about ourselves, about life, about experiences. And that's actually becomes normal. We don't even realize that. And so I actually think our thoughts in our head most of the time are toxic, not positive. And I'm talking about the kind of thoughts that you would never let someone else talk to you that way, but that's how you're speaking to yourself in your head. And so I think it's actually more powerful to speak those thoughts out loud, because once you say them, you give them a voice. I often say in our body, they're toxic. You speak them out loud and you have a chance to consciously look at it and think, wait, that's not true. Like, I'm not that horrible person that I'm saying to myself. So I think it's actually really powerful to start to speak those words and put them out there. It actually also puts the other piece in perspective, that so many people are afraid to show up, share their story and speak for fear of judgment of what others are going to say. It's the number one thing I hear all the time. And I often say, what's the worst thought you've had about yourself? And they're like, today? I'm like, sure, let's go with today. And they'll say it. And I'm like, okay, great. So who in your life talks to you that way? And they're like, nobody does. And I'm like, so does it really matter what others say? Because our biggest critic is living right here, like in mm-hmm. our own head mm-hmm. and in our own body. And when we start to talk about it again, it's like inner shame, or give it a voice and you put it out, and then you look at it and say, this isn't true. This is not who I am. So it's doing that inner work and understanding the power of our thoughts and emotions and beliefs that we have about ourselves.
Now, okay. So I'm a woman and I'm sitting and I'm listening to this and I'm like, Marsha, I am not going to the school and getting on the stage and airing what my mother would call dirty laundry in front of everybody. Yeah. All yeah. right. Yeah. But I realize that I want the relief you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Other than getting up on a stage, where do you see options for pulling that shame out and looking at it? Like you said, there's the mean girl living in there. And when we really, if we wrote all those statements out on the mirror as we said them to ourselves, we'd think, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't let anybody talk to me this way. Mm-hmm. So where are the opportunities, short of getting up and announcing this, you know, in some community meeting, where do you see opportunities in women changing their stories and renegotiating that narrative?
I think this is a fantastic question. I think I refer to it many times because I will say to people, like, you don't need to stand up on a stage and share your story. That's not for everybody. I know that. I think it's for more people than we think. They're just too afraid to do it. But I do think that. But it's not for everybody, and that's okay. But if you don't find a way to own your story, it owns you. And when it owns you, it controls you and it blocks you from living the life that you're meant to live. So how can you shift that and change that? I learned a lot in a Facebook group. I learned a lot in closed parent groups, parent support groups, conversations and connections with people that I've met online. There are a lot of safe places that you can practice sharing your story and be able to release what you're holding on to. And when you can learn, here's a really important part, I think, is that you always want to be able to speak from a space of, going back to ownership, but speak from a space where, you know, it's not full of anger and resentment and frustration, because I love it, but when you do it from that space, that's all you're going to attract back. There's a lot of people who are very angry, very frustrated, rightfully so. There's a lot of stuff happening. But when we speak from that space, that's all we bring back. So it's really important to start to release that yourself, heal yourself, so that you can speak from a much more empowered space. So I would say closed, safe spaces. Don't ever underestimate the power of journal. I literally journaled for probably 2 years before I ever really started to share. That's really powerful because it's getting it out of your body. I actually used to practice, and I still do, when I wake up with that mucky head day where it's like, mm-hmm. oh God, not feeling so good today, I give myself half a page to dump out. And it's like, I just call it my dump out. What's going on in my head? What am I thinking? And I write it down. I don't live in that space. I don't go off for 10 pages. I literally just put it in a half a page. And then I look at it and I'm like, whew, is that ever good to get that out? Because that is not how I want to feel today. So you can do things like that to be able to start to recognize your thoughts and what you're saying to yourself so that you can create change with it.
So you're literally taking out the garbage. You're writing everything down on the page, taking out the garbage, and I'm a journaler too, but I'm such a scribbler that I probably couldn't go back and read it if I wanted to. So.
Exactly. I've become a scribbler. I really have. It's not good, but yes.
But that body release, so somatic work, what we're talking about is really getting into the body and asking the body, well, what are you feeling? How is this happening for you? What happened then for you? And that journaling is part of that body release. As you're stepping into that body release and you're journaling, you said, I don't go on for 10 pages. So you don't want to live in what I would call the grievance story. How do you pull up the reins? How do you stop and say, nope, we're only doing half a page and then I'm getting on with my day. I'm not going to go down and binge on ice cream and watch Netflix all day and call, you know, all my girlfriends and complain.
Oh, again, great question. Yes, short to concise, because we don't want to live there, right? It's like, just dump out. I literally think of it like the trash. It's just get it out and it's on the page. And then I want people to know that our subconscious mind, so we've got our conscious mind, 5% of what we hold, beliefs, thoughts, emotions, everything. Our subconscious mind is 95%. It's running the show. It's always running the show, the subconscious mind, but we tend to ignore it. And so if we're in this space of understanding how our brain works, our thoughts are only ever replaying the past or predicting the future. Like, you have to consciously work to make them be present. Even if you try, it's really hard to stay present, which is why we do the practices that we do. But what I want you to look at is, like, whatever you're focused on is what you're going to be creating more of. So if you're only looking at the garbage statements that are in your brain, the thoughts and emotions that are there, the why me, the victim, this is not fair, I don't like this, that, blah, blah, blah. What happens is you will only see more of that. So what you want to do is look at it, get it out, and then ask yourself, like, is this how I want to live my life? Is it how I want things to go? Is this what I want to create? And then you start to create the life you're moving towards by your thoughts. So I have a half a page of journaling, and then I have another page that is literally like, what am I creating this month? How am I showing up for myself? What am I doing? And I write it all as though it's already done. So this might sound really silly to some people, but it's really powerful for me. It's like the end of October, I have been consistent with all of my workouts. I have gone out for my walks every day. It's not a list of to-do things. I focus on how do I feel when that's done. Mm. I have done this in my business. I've connected with this many people. I've helped, you know, this many authors. Whatever it is, it's like this beautiful script. I like to call it a script of what I'm doing with my life this month. And then I will do one for 3 months, and then I will do one for 1 year. So I am consciously training my thoughts to focus on what I'm doing, where I'm going, what I'm creating, not where I've been. I actually just released this. It's not out yet, but I recorded a solo podcast episode on where is the magnifying glass. Humans, we take the magnifying glass and we put it on all of our past and our failures. We amplify the crap out of that. We look at it, we blow it up, we focus on it. That will never change your life. That is one thing I can guarantee. It will never create change in your life. It will actually remind you that you want to live there. You might say you don't want to, but your mind is like, but you're asking, you're focusing on this. So this is what we want to see. How can you write in the direction so that your thoughts, your emotions, your beliefs are anchored with where you're going, not where you've been?
Absolutely. I'm going to go back and summarize. So you just gave all of us a perfect exercise. And the first thing that I heard was, look at it. So if you don't pull it out to look at it, like you said, the 95% keeps running.
Oh yeah.
Am I correct in this? The 95% keeps running in the back of the brain, whether you pull it out and look at it or not, which means if you don't pull it out and look at it, if I'm correct, then you don't have an opportunity to change it.
No, it's a wheel. It's a wheel that keeps going. And if you think negative thoughts, your subconscious mind literally says, oh, you want to see more of that? Okay, here you go. And it will pull up memories of what you have walked through and what you've been through. Your mind, it's so funny. We think our mind is running the show. It's not. Our subconscious mind, which is our body, which is where we hold all of our emotions. We feel first. And I'm not going to get this right with the brain, but we feel emotions first before it ever travels to our frontal cortex. We can't think faster than what we feel. We always feel first, then we think. So we think it's our brain that is actually running the show. It's not. It's us and how we're feeling and what we're holding on to, the emotions, etc. That's running the show.
Oh my goodness. It's kind of like, this is a crude analogy, but it's kind of like the Facebook ads that follow you around, right? If you have been looking for shoes, then suddenly all these shoes pop up and they're following you around when you may have been like, well, but I'm done looking for shoes. I don't need those shoes anymore. But Facebook doesn't know that. You haven't pulled it out and said, okay, now I'm looking for a new truck or now I'm looking for this.
I love that you said that. And if I can share one quick thing, I've used this with clients and I've said it on podcasts. If you want to know what your mind is focused on, go to your Explorer pages.
Oh my, I don't want to know. No, I really do want to know.
and inspiring stories and sport. And but you know what? For some people, it's actually a really good reminder. You go to that explore page, you go to that information page, and you see what comes up for you. That's what is running. It's a scroll that's running in your mind. Our brain is exactly the same way. It's like our subconscious mind is exactly the same way. It's responding exactly the same way.
So you're feeding it. And if I'm going to reframe this exercise and see if I've got this right. Look at it, get it out. Is this how you want to see the world, live your life, do your actions, respond, all those types of things. And then I would call it setting intentions, then set the intention for what you want to do next. And you said you do this for the month, for 3 months, for a year.
So I usually write a script that's 6 months, and it's like, so 6 months from now, I have one that's set now till the end of December, what life, business, personal health, everything looks like. So it's in my focus there. And on a daily basis, not every day, but most days, I will journal. Like, I'm in October right now. So when I get the garbage out, I write a couple of powerful statements that really mean something to me. And
ooh,
then
can you give us an example?
Yes.
Of a powerful statement?
Okay. So this is such a great question. So let me just share this. If you're going to write a powerful statement, it actually has to be, this is not affirmation. I'm sorry. I'm not a big affirmation fan, because if your brain doesn't believe it, it's just words. So it you have to work with your brain. So for me, one of my biggest downfalls for years, it's call it perfectionist brain, call it like overcoming trauma, overachiever, whatever you want to call it, was that I had to work hard to burn out, to make things happen. And I was literally every twice a year burnt out. And so I hit a point where it was like, this is just not working. So my sentence that I write, and I actually had it everywhere for the longest time, is like, the more I rest, the more I earn, the more I rest, the more I play, the more I earn, my desires are met with ease and grace. So that means something to me. Yep. The more I rest, the more I play, the more I earn, my desires are met with ease and grace. That means something to me from my body, because it's not how I lived my life, but it's how I choose to live it now. And that means that if I say those things, then is my life matching up to that? So for example, am I sitting at my desk for 12 hours a day, not exercising, not taking care of myself, not drinking water? If I'm doing that, that's not true. Like, what I'm saying I want is not true. It's not in alignment. So I literally come to the space of going, if that's what my guidepost is, then when I find myself in a state of frustration, working like crazy, not even taking a break for water or washroom, I'm like, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? This is like old patterns. No. And I'll literally stop. I will take 3 minutes to breathe, which sounds so silly, but honestly, you can reset your whole body in 3 minutes. And it's a space of, no, the more I rest, the more I earn, like the more I rest, the more I play, the more I earn, my desires are met with ease and grace. That means I now value sleep. I value turning my phone off. I value my boundaries. I value play time. I value my time outside. All of those things allow me to show up the way that I want to make a difference. So that's an example. And how did I get to that? That was a little bit of work to figure out how to word it. But look at a pattern that's been on repeat for you in your life, and then ask yourself, if you could live opposite to that, what would that look like? How would that feel? And those words might not mean a lot to people who are listening, but for me, they were really powerful, because it was like, wait, that's actually what I do desire. I do desire more time for me. I do desire to do. And you know what happens when you start to do those things on a regular basis? I start to value myself more. And if I value myself more, I show up differently for me. I like, it's a beautiful ripple that can happen. So my journaling exercise is far more than journaling. It's actually a lot of my mindset and subconscious reprogramming that I do early in the morning.
Well, and if I understand reprogramming, and correct me on this, is you're basically telling that 95%, this is what we're going to think today. This is how we're going to go forward, because the brain's main function is there to protect us. And if we say, hey, this is the thing that will protect us, keep us safe, keep us moving forward, connected with the tribe, all of those pieces, then you're retraining this to go in the direction, instead of in that grievance story, to go in the direction that builds you and builds your community.
100%. Everything you just said is 100%. And I didn't know, like, this is the premise of NLP. This is the premise of the work that I do in everything now. I didn't know it was NLP. So if I give a quick example, like back in 2014, I was listening to podcasts, I was listening to YouTube videos, and I was listening to Tony Robbins. And one of the things for me, he kept saying, was like, what's the word that you're saying every single day that you're keeping yourself anchored in? For me, it was the word stuck. I felt stuck dealing with, you know, addiction and police and school. Like, I talk about feeling stuck. It's all I felt. But I also felt stuck because I said the word hundreds of times an hour. Like, that's the only thing I said. And so sometimes the changes that you can make can be as simple as being aware of the words that you're saying on repeat, and then asking yourself, do you want to feel that way? Like, do you actually want to feel stuck? Because you're solidifying it every time you say it. It's very powerful when you start to understand how your words work, how our emotions are dictating what we're feeling, and how we're making a very strange connection meaning of what we're feeling. And I think that's the piece on the story and the narrative. If I can just share one little bit of that. So one of the things that I shared and we spoke about earlier is this piece on the story and the narrative. The story is the story is the story. It's the facts of the story. I was a parent who dealt with teen substance abuse. You can just take that and you can relate and connect to that. The problem wasn't the story. Yes, the story was a problem, but the problem was the narrative of what I made the story mean about me. I failed. I was a terrible mother. I didn't do it right. I didn't fix it. I mean, what's wrong with me? Like, this is what I am here for. Like, I don't get to be happy. I don't get it to be easy. Like, the meanings that I made it all about me failing at life. The narrative will take you down every single time. And that is a big part of mindset and understanding emotions and beliefs and thoughts as well. But many times for clients, it's like, wait, what's the story? And then what's the narrative? The problem is we're not repeating the story. We're repeating and giving life to the narrative.
We're giving the meaning to the story from the place that our body is, our spirituality is, our mentality is. And that you answered it earlier, but I want to reiterate that for folks who are listening. 2015, Marsha could not probably have come up with that sentence.
But she could
come up with something other than I am stuck. So that for folks who are really in the chaos right now, that one word, would you say that one word is enough to shift that, to begin to move?
Yes, 100%. And for me, stuck was where I started. Choice is where I went to. Radical responsibility is where I went to. Like, everything started. So I really got to the point where it was like, I didn't say the word stuck anymore. I actually treated it like a bad toxic swear word. Like, it was like, I don't say that. I'm not stuck. I'm just moving and I don't know where I'm going yet. So you see the difference in the words when you say them. And then when it came down to choices became a point of saving me, because I had to get to a point of going, wait, that's not my choice. That's not my, oh my gosh, like everything I'm taking responsibility for and everything that I'm spending every single ounce of energy that I have all day long aren't my choices. None of them are my choices. And what happens when we do that is that we don't have anything left for ourselves. And then it gets actually really easy to not take care of ourselves and not think of ourselves, because I don't have any time left anyways. And then all of a sudden it's like we lose ourselves in the process back to the quicksand. And big part of it was because I wasn't taking any time. But when I really started to look at it, almost everything I was responding to or reacting to weren't my choices. But when I got to the point of being able to respond, it was like, wait, that's not my choice. That's not my choice. And even my kids got to the point where they were hearing it. They're like, we know, Mom, it's not your choice. And I'm like, well, it's your choice. If this is what you want for your life, this is your choice. This is what I'm doing. And this is my choice. I'm going to own my choices. You're going to have to own yours. And the interesting thing, I say this, by owning my own choices and taking responsibility for myself, I started to change. Because I started to change, I reacted differently. I learned how to respond. I didn't fight every single battle with this blow up bomb fire. And I actually learned how to respond in a calmer way and stay with the facts, less emotion, less words, respond differently. When I responded differently, it was like the feedback loop was that, okay, I feel better. Now I didn't waste a ton of energy. Okay, I feel better. I'm taking care of me. Still have chaos happening over here. But then what happened is I kept responding differently. And as I responded differently, they had to respond differently. And as they started to respond differently, the story started to change because they literally had to make the same choices I was having to make. If they wanted to create change in their life, they were going to have to take responsibility. They were going to have to own those choices. And that's what they did. So I don't for a second ever take credit for that, because I think it's actually really important that they take credit for the changes that they've made in their life. And I know a lot of parents have this is another whole issue, is we want to take our kids' wins and put it on a badge and say, like, I did good because my kid did this. But the thing is that we don't get to just pick and choose what we own and take for ourselves. We actually, if you're going to take the good, you're going to have to take all of it. And so I often think, you know, let them make those choices and learn as they go. And that really then became a point where they started to make different choices in their life because there was no one else to hold it, right? If two people are trying to own it, like massive codependency, if two people are trying to own it, nobody owns it. And when nobody owns it, nobody changes it. Nobody changes anything. And so that was a big piece of it as well. But I can honestly say that a lot of those changes came from understanding the words that I was saying every single day and how they were keeping me stuck in that spot.
I have nothing more to add. You just put my whole understanding out there in that you are only responsible for you. Mm-hmm. You're responsible to them to a point. Mm-hmm. We're only responsible for you. If you keep sinking in the quicksand, you're going to keep pulling people down with you unless they are strong enough to set their own boundaries and figure out their own choices, as you were speaking about. But you choosing to set your boundaries, make your own choices, get out of the quicksand and say, guys, you've got to make choices too. Mm-hmm. That's where on Sober on Purpose, we talk a lot about people getting stuck in somebody else's purpose, not in their purpose. Because we have given it all away to everybody else. And then we wonder why we are so exhausted and sick and tired of being sick and tired.
100%.
Thank you, Marsha. That it was just so well said. I'm like, I'm not going to hop in here because she's nailing it one right after the other. I really appreciate your time today. I know the audience is going to get a lot out of this. We will put the exercise, if it's all right with you, down in the show notes in the bottom. And I really encourage people to hop on your podcast. And the body one is called
Everybody Holds a Story.
Everybody Holds a Story. So hop on there as well. There's so much to be learned. And I am such a fan. She's got over 600 episodes. You can find all kinds of things in there. Hop in there, take a look at what that is. And thank you, Marsha, for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for just continuing this conversation to support so many other parents. I love when I get to cross paths with somebody who is speaking very similar language, putting this out there and supporting other families. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
You, beloved listener, are creative, resourceful, and whole. Do you want to add more purpose to your sober journey? Do you want to make room for the new and make your dreams a reality? Apply today for a dream session. Go to tanyajoya.com. That's TANYAGIOIA.com and apply today. Let's get you dreaming about your new purpose.